Angola Speaks. Our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations, and that website is wvfoundations.org. And we will take some calls in a bit after we open the phone lines at, oops, what is that phone number? I'll have to grab that. Don't have it right in front of me. But anyway, continue. We do have one email comment. This is from Joe. He says, the media never misses a chance to blame the brutish Germans for wanton destruction. The Emperor Caligula built two huge luxury barges for himself on Lake Nemi. The larger ship was essentially an elaborate floating palace, which contained quantities of marble, mosaic floors, heating and plumbing, such as baths among its amenities. It was scuttled after his death. When Mussolini came to power, he wished to emulate the grandeur of Rome. He drained the lake, and archaeologists recovered the wrecks, and a museum was built. The museum burned in 1944 and was, as usual, blamed on the vengeful retreating Germans, but more likely fell victim to American artillery, similar to what happened to the monastery of Monte Cassino. There, the Germans actually rescued artwork before the abbey was bombed. Okay, Rodney.
Absolutely. As an example, and as a matter of fact, during the 1940, I believe it was in the 1940 Western campaign against France, the Germans were accused by Western propagandists of destroying some historic cathedrals, and the German newsreels actually released their own newsreels that showed German troops attending services and actually Wehrmacht troops actually playing, I believe, the organs in them and saying, look, they're fine, here they are. And it actually, by comparison, the German campaigns in the West wreaked very mild destruction. Their campaigns were designed as quick campaigns to end the wars really quick, you know, the blitzkriegs, as opposed to the Allied campaigns, you know, the D-Day campaign, which just bombed and destroyed and wreaked havoc and destruction. If you ask the French to rate the German 1940 campaign as opposed to the 1944 Allied campaign as far as destruction and havoc on the nation, I think you'll find that the Allied campaigns wreaked more havoc, more destruction, and more terror than the German campaigns as far as just absolutely bombing and carpet bombing and artilleries and all of that. It was just absolutely worlds apart. The Allies didn't care what they blew up, what they destroyed, what they bombed, and who they bombed. The concept of collateral damage is an Allied invention. It is not a German invention, contrary to what we hear about Rotterdam and all of that. Those are isolated incidents.
And of course, they still continue to prove it by their actions in Iraq and Afghanistan. And look at what they did in Japan. I mean, my gosh, it's, you know, they haven't changed their tactics at all.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, it's amazing how you know the old saying, the person in a glass house shouldn't throw rocks, and the Allies, you know, they didn't have any windows left. They were throwing, you know, they'd broken all their windows. So
right.
This before we take a call, I just wanted to summarize and give this last statistics. I really would like to take calls. We didn't get a chance to last time. But it's really important to, you know, I can't stress enough, the Germans had a plan. They had a worldview as to what they wanted Europe to look like. They didn't want to conquer the world. They care less about the world, contrary to Allied propaganda and contrary to the stories we hear today that Hitler wanted to conquer the world. He could care less about the world. But they did have a plan for Europe. And, you know, so this art was very important.
All righty. We'll have to pick that up on the other side of the break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plan, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com.
If you're taking 1, 2, 5 or more nutritional supplements, please stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food supplement you can buy. Men, women, children, even Olympic athletes the world over have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. And now take just one nutritional supplement instead of many. The Bio Superfood formulas are whole food products composed with four of the most nutrient-dense algae found on Earth. Bio Superfood for the brain helps with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. If you can increase brain health, the rest of the body is a no-brainer. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity and is safe for you and your family. Learn more and order your Bio Superfood formulas at BioAge.com, spelled BioAge.com, BioAge.com, or call 877-288-9116. That's 877-288-9116. BioAge, the age of advanced organics.
Our guest today is Rodney Martin. His website is WB Foundations, and we will take your calls after a bit at 877-488-5350. And one of the guys in the chat room said, Eisenhower actually gave the okay to bomb that monastery, although the Allies could have just sidestepped it. And I think, really, that that's true about a lot of the buildings. Of course, they did it because they could and because they wanted to demoralize the population and depopulate.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, Eisenhower had a deep hatred of the Germans. He had a deep hatred, and you know there was always a rivalry between MacArthur and Eisenhower. MacArthur always noted that Eisenhower's casualty rates were tremendously higher than his, and MacArthur actually had tougher battlefield conditions than Eisenhower, talking about geography and, you know, have far more amphibious landings and such than Eisenhower. Eisenhower had a much, I think, a far superior opponent, but battlefield conditions, MacArthur had real tough battlefield conditions in terms of geography and weather and things of that nature. But you know, Eisenhower didn't. Eisenhower could have gone around. You know, in Italy, he could have gone around Monte Cassino. But again, like I said earlier, Eisenhower and the Allies, they didn't care what they bombed, what they shelled. They didn't care about, you know, collateral damage was something that they, it was a term that they developed. And you know, and then blame the Germans afterward, put Germans on trial for things that they did. It's incredible. The hypocrisy is incredible. But again, it's war, and the problem we have today is getting people to sift through not the big lie, but the volumes of lies, and to understand that one, the good guys don't always win, and the good guys aren't always the good guys. I think that and that there are mistakes in history, and we need to learn from the mistakes.
Right.
Getting back to this, as I was saying, it's really important to understand that the Allies, there was no real plans. You know, you had this marriage of convenience between, Bolshevism and hyper-capitalism to smash National Socialism. But the Germans, they had a plan for post-war Europe, and art was part of their worldview. This museum in Linz, Hitler's personal art collection was going to go there. And then, of course, the art that was being purchased from around Europe in the occupied lands, and some of the art that was war booty was going to go there. And that was a reason. And frankly, I'll say the war booty art, the 570 pieces, and if there was more, I don't care. Because if war booty is good, if it was good in World War I, and if it was good for after World War II, then the same standard needs to apply. And the business avoiding all of these sales is absolutely incredible. And look at all of the war, quote-unquote, war booty that came back from Iraq and Afghanistan and such, and look at all of the personal items. In the last show, Dana, we talked about the Donetsk government and all of the personal effects that was claimed as war booty, including personal effects off the dead body of Admiral Friedeborg, including his wedding band. I mean, that is incredible.
So we've
seen these numbers. We know what the real numbers were. We know there was about 5,000 pieces total. Of that 5,000, 567 were considered war booty. Let's talk about the Allies after World War II. On the U.S. side, there was a special detail under the supervision of Captain Gordon Gilkey. They went around Germany in the post-war period, and they snatched up as much German art. Now, you know, we talked about the gathering and the purchase of art, but art was was tremendous during the National Socialist government. And the art, it was, art flourished. And this special squad went around, and of course a lot of art was hidden as well. And so this special squad went around grabbing as much art that was produced by artists during the National Socialist government between 1933 and 1945. Bear in mind, artists were locked up. They were subjected to that horrid denazification process. Musicians were locked up. They were considered fellow travelers or Nazis, and they were forbidden to work and paint and write and such. But according to U.S. government records, the United States alone confiscated 9,000 paintings. Those paintings sat in U.S. government warehouses until 1982. So the last of them were picked up in 1948. So from 1948 to 1982, 9,000 German paintings that had been confiscated set in U.S. government warehouses. They weren't even stored properly. And finally, it took an act of Congress to return them to Germany, to West Germany, actually. They were still two Germanys at that time, who they promptly put them in similar warehouses. The same squad also went around gathering up sculptures, statues, and such, and smashing them, because they considered them too militaristic. We're talking about the Arnold Breckner statues and sculptures, those beautiful works of art. They put them under the hammer. Anything that they considered militaristic or nationalistic, they smashed them. Also, a lot of pieces of art just disappeared and ended up in the GI's backpacks, ended up in personal collections, and you'll see them being sold now by the heirs of these U.S. soldiers and such, and officials who, didn't log them in and ship them to these warehouses. They basically stole them. On the Soviet side, Stalin essentially emulated and decided to do what the National Socialists were planning to do at Linz. He appointed a special commissar to go out and steal as much art as possible, including all of the art or any of the art that could be found that was earmarked for the Führer Museum in Linz, and decided that it would be good to either have in the Hermitage or a couple of other locations in the Soviet Union at the time. Interestingly, it ended up in the Hermitage. A lot of the art in the that was stolen, outright stolen. Soviet troops also stole art out of private German homes. They had the eastern part of Germany under their occupation zone, and they actually would go into German homes and stole art out of German homes. Interestingly, as part of that 1943 Allied declaration, they declared art in private German homes as suspected looted as well. And so if you had a nice-looking painting over your fireplace mantle and you were a German in 19—during the war years, the Allies could come in your house and say, that falls under the 1943 declaration. They'd take it off the wall, and it would end up in someone else's home or in the Soviet Union, depending on which geographic region of Germany you lived. So even personal property was stripped in the post-war Germany. A lot of Germans who had art in their own, family for, years and years and years, they were out. Those rights were voided.
Didn't they also turn German homes over to other entities, just kick the family out and say, okay, we've confiscated your home, of those homes that were still standing after the Allied bombing?
They did two things. We talked about this a little bit. We're kind of digressing, but I think it's worth covering. They did two things with German homes. Homes that were still standing, they either gave first, on art, the House of German Art, the beautiful House of German Art, the museum in Munich, the very first building that was commissioned by the National Socialists, the Americans turned that into a mess hall. Stripped it all out, emptied it, and turned it into a mess hall. And it was a GI mess hall for several years. It is now a half and half. Building still stands today in Munich. It has some art in it, but not a permanent collection, and a nightclub that goes to show you where it ranks in society today over there. Homes they would give to Allied officers, and they would kick Germans out and give them to all those, quote, DPs, displaced persons. That was more prevalent up in other areas. Now, General Patton didn't do it as much until he was relieved of command in Bavaria. And then once they kicked him out, then, of course, Eisenhower put a shill in there, and they did it more often in Bavaria. But you're quite right. They would take people's homes and possessions, and they would kick them out on the street and turn them over to allies and allied officers or officials. They would give them to displaced persons, including their possessions in some cases. But the art, which is what we're covering today, even private pieces, that had nothing to do with, the official act of this commission that was based in Dresden, art and private, individuals' art came under this Allied, this Allied gauntlet. And, the Soviets did it, the Americans did it. And it was talk about the great art theft was not done by Germany. The great art theft was done post-war, by the Allies. Because, where did all this stuff end up? It ended up in Moscow and in St. Petersburg in the Hermitage and in Washington, D.C. and in Britain and every place else.
Right. All righty, we do have some callers lining up, and we will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Jerry D.
Hi.
Jerry and his family, like you, are very concerned about world conditions and have gathered many emergency preparedness items, including Turtle Tough shelters.
We have added 2 24-foot Turtle Toughs to our supplies and feel very secure knowing our large family is ready for whatever the future may bring.
Turtle Tough shelters are not tents. They are permanent yet portable four-season geodesic frame shelters that are as strong as a cabin at a fraction of the cost and are easy to set up, take down, and move anywhere. Available in 2 sizes. Get your Turtle Tough shelter and accessories included at TurtleToughShelters.com. That's Turtle, T-U-F-F, Shelters.com. Or call 801-623-3288. That's 801-623-3288. Or see them online at TurtleToughShelters.com. Turtle Tough Shelters, your all-season home away from home.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer-rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureEffect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology, all while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureEffect Ultra today by visiting PureEffectFilters.com. Or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821. Or visit PureEffectFilters.com.
Hey there, my name is Frank Bates. What I'm about to tell you in the next 60 seconds could get me in a lot of trouble. I just created a free video presentation at 123crooks.com that exposes the electricity monopolies and government agencies for what they really are. Incompetent, lying crooks that are counting on your ignorance and fear to keep your power bills criminally high. Some have called this a conspiracy. Others have called it a cover-up. And you'll be shocked to find out how deep the conspiracy goes. My video at 123crooks.com exposes the truth and shows you the secret of how I beat them and how you can beat them too. Watch the controversial video that thousands of other smart patriots have already seen in the last 3 months. Go to 123crooks.com and discover one weird trick to slash your power bill and protect your home. Go watch my video now at 123crooks.com before they force me to shut it down. 123crooks.com.
Our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations, and that site is wvfoundations.org. We will take your calls at 877-488-5350. The U.S. government, Third Army, appropriated the Kronberg Castle sometime between April 10th and April 20th of 1945. They used it as an officers' club, one of the 14 in the Frankfurt area. It had 30 bedrooms and was staffed by 30 young, attractive females to accommodate the officers' needs. So, you see, they weren't really over there saving democracy. They were doing other things, including plundering.
Yeah, what is it we hear about forced prostitution by some of these other nations? And, you know, we talked a little bit about that during the last program about the forced prostitution in the American and British zones. And a lot of these German girls and women were forced to do this to feed their children. You know, whereas the Soviets in their zone, they just wholesale raped, you know. And, I mean, it just, you know, was there much difference between the Soviet zone and the British, French, and American? I would say probably there was just a little different finesse on the Western side. But, you know, it was essentially of the wholesale rape of a Western Christian nation. And so, you know, I would argue there wasn't much difference between the British, French, and Americans and the Red Beasts in the East. They
right.
really wasn't. If I can share with you an excerpt from the 1943 Declaration, Deanna, with the voided the art sales, it said, It is realized that art in German homes and that may be stored in underground facilities consists of a large amount of stolen goods. So they just basically made a blanket declaration that, you know, anything that's in people's homes is stolen goods. And if it's stored underground, you keep in mind Germany was being bombed. And then, of course, you had the ground invasion going on. So if you stored your property underground or in your cellars or anything, it just is incredible. This business, they would have these pinheads crafting this language to sanction their illegal acts. And that, of course, that continues today. Washington is really good at that. I mean, they just really haven't changed their playbook. And Stalin appointed Mikhail Kropotchenko, who was going to be in charge of their art thefts, the Soviets' art thefts. As a result of all of the amount of art, and of course the Russians, which is, quote, Russia is a successor to the Soviet Union, they've never disclosed all of the art that they carted off from Germany and Eastern Europe. You know, they plundered Eastern Europe in their occupation of Eastern Europe for 70 years. But he made a statement that came out that was released years later. He said, quote, "It is now possible to turn Moscow's Pushkin Museum into one of the world's great art museums like the British Museum, the Louvre, or the Hermitage with the amount of art that they've now imported into the Soviet Union as a result of the occupation of Germany." That tells you a lot. They basically had nothing before, and as a result of their theft of the art in Germany, their occupation of Germany, they could now stock a museum. They went from zero to, you know, they went, I mean, just incredible.
Right. Well, you know, in these 14 other facilities, mainly castles or very, very nice homes, what they did was that they opened treasure showrooms. Now, in the Kronberg Castle, they had a 12 by 14 foot treasure showroom complete with glass display cases, and they would allow the officers to go down there and shop, and then they sent all this booty home.
Yeah, well, when they were shopping, remember the old chain stores, Pick and Save, Deanna? Pick and Save. They just took what they wanted. Yeah, that's what they did. And, you know, it's just incredible. I did have an email. Someone sent me an email, and they brought up one issue, and I want to address it real briefly. Deanna, a few years back, there was this catalog that was, it made news. They said, oh, here's the smoking gun. Here's the evidence that Hitler was personally involved and directed the art theft of Europe, the art plundering of Europe. And it was this catalog that had been presented to him by this art commission, the special commission out of Dresden, and it showed the various artworks that was being prepared for the Linz Museum, and it, you know, they had come from various nations, and basically what this was a report. It wasn't some sort of secret report, and they were, you know, there had been several presented to him, and what these were progress reports, because this was a special commission that had been appointed. I believe this commission had been appointed in 1938. That's how early Hitler took an interest. And this was shortly after the Anschluss with Austria, when Austria joined the Greater German Reich, that Hitler decided Linz was going to be the cultural capital of the new Europe. And so he appointed this special commission. And these books of these, you know, it had copies, photostats, I believe, of these paintings, were not some sort of smoking gun that showed that Hitler was supervising, go steal that one, go steal that one, go steal. They were progress reports that says, this is our catalog, this is going to be the initial catalog of the new Linz Museum. Incidentally, the exact same process had been used when the House of German Art was being built and developed in Munich back between 1933 and 1937. So these catalogs of art that was being prepared and developed for the Führer Museum in Linz, these things that were being presented to Hitler was not a smoking gun at all.
All righty, we will be right back in a few minutes after a word from our sponsors.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Are you concerned about fluoride, chlorine, parasites, and other contaminants in your drinking water? Dalton ceramic water filters have been made continuously since 1827 and are used by disaster relief organizations and in third world countries to supply safe drinking water. Not only do we offer gravity filter systems, but also under the sink and countertop systems. Our replacement filters can be used to upgrade your existing system. And unlike some other filters on the market, Dalton filters do not have to be primed. For more information, call us at 800-696-1435, 800-696-1435, or order online at Dalton.com. That's Dalton.com.
Are you prepared? Are you ready? You should be. CampingSurvival.com is your source for camping supplies, survival gear, and survival food. Whether you are an emergency preparedness-minded individual interested in MRE and colloidal silver, a hardcore hiker in need of paracord, a water filter system, and fire piston, or just need a basic first aid kit or emergency kit for the family, CampingSurvival.com is the right place. Call CampingSurvival.com today. Toll free 800-537-1339. CampingSurvival.com. It's not about the end of the world. It's not about surviving a hypothetical plane crash. It's about the satisfaction you get knowing you can take care of yourself and or your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. Call now 800-537-1339.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
A healthy heart starts with Extendovite. I've always believed that I had to have a strong defense to overcome the new superbugs of today. Extendovite, a 7-herb heart protection cocktail, not only helped me to overcome a massive heart attack, but it also has built up my natural immune defenses against colds and flus. Extendovite has so many benefits that we all should be taking Extendovite to build up our defenses for what superbugs might emerge yet. So start today, clean out the toxins, and be as healthy as you can be. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations. His website is wvfoundations.org. And we're talking about, well, a lot of very interesting things. We do have another email question, which probably is the subject of another program that we plan on doing, but this is from Louise. Hitler is very often blamed, especially in the English alternative media, as being responsible for this terrible European Union. They say that it was originally his plan. I'd be interested to hear what your guest has to say about this.
Well, yes and no, and we are going to discuss that on a future show. We talked about, we have a show entitled Germany's post-war goals and objectives. I really don't want to do a spoiler, but the EU as it is constituted today is not would not have been per se would not be the functioning EU as I interpret what the National Socialists would have constituted, and I'll just leave it at that. So the National Socialist Germany would not have abrogated nation states by any means.
Okay.
I can share with you an interesting story, Deanna, as it falls into this. In 2009, the city of Linz did a kind of a series of seminars where they discussed the city's culture and their history and culture, and they addressed, they actually had some presentations and seminars on Hitler's plans for the development of this cultural complex in Linz. And what's interesting is there was no big focus on looting and theft of art. And there was some discussion about it. The director of the Upper Austrian State Museums, Peter Osman, made an interesting response, because a historian by the name of Tina Walzer was making a whole lot of noise at that time, that said that this exhibition, because they did put on some exhibitions about what the planned complex was and what the exhibits were going to be and the extent of what that complex was going to be, and said that the exhibition that was being put on in 2009, this was her quote, this is Ms. Walzer's quote, "The Nazis looted art," and I'm quoting her, "the Nazis looted art from all over Europe, from France and from the Netherlands and from Poland and from Italy and Austria and Hungary." I'm still trying to figure out how they looted art from themselves, but including Austria there, "and gathering right. this huge mass of very valuable paintings, but you don't see any of this in the exhibition. I think it's a pity. I think it's a missed chance, because the exhibition that the city of Linz had did not focus or did not really even talk about art theft, because as we keep the more you really dwell into it and apply facts as opposed to emotion, there was no theft of art. So the this is Mr. Osman's, who was the director of the State Museum, who ran the actual exhibitions. This was his comment: "I found the exhibition to be very informative and correct. It objectively," and I would say emphasis on objectively, "shows the period as it was back then, because up to now many inaccuracies has been put out." And I thought that was very telling, and I think he has a lot of courage for saying that, particularly in Europe. But again, you know, Austria is a little bit different, a little, not far. Austria was the land of Jörg Haider. So I think that was a very telling statement in comparison, that they did not put any emphasis or focus on this, you know, fairy tale of stealing and looting of art.
Right. Now, they had a property control warehouse, the U.S. government, in
yes.
several places.
Yeah. Mainly all on the East Coast. They had one in Virginia, I believe, and then there was one at the National Archives. And I know, like I say, Hitler's books are in the Library of Congress, because when I was back there in the 90s, I saw some of the books. I was able to actually get in and see some of the books. And I thought
like in Salzburg, they had what they called a property control warehouse in Salzburg.
Oh, in Europe, yeah.
Yeah, and they just, they were warehouses. And the group that they, you know, first the military goes in, and then the people who estimate the value of certain pieces, art and whatnot, go in. And then they go in, groups go in to actually confiscate things from both private homes and public buildings. And then they put it all in these warehouses.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's, you know, it's a government controlled, warehouse, property control warehouse.
Yeah. And of course, in between those, segments, there was a lot of room for sticky fingers. And a lot of that happened. And of course, you know, this big issue that's taking place now, and of course, what the clearinghouse and the U.S. government in their zone, and the U.S. government was the big lead for the most part, on the western side, they retained control and set all of the foundation for art for the western, you know, part of Germany. And this current organization, whatever bureaucracy, that's being operated through the German Historical Museum, and they say in coordination with the Federal Office unresolved property issues. I mean, this is incredible. They have scanned these nearly 5,000 works, and a majority. What's interesting is you go into the archives even more. I mean, I spent several hours this week preparing for this program into that archive section, and you know, you can translate it into the, you know, a whole plethora of languages, because they want everybody to be able to lay claim to this art. And it's been there for years and years. 5,000 pieces they have, and they scan these images so people can go and lay claim. A vast majority, because you can go in there and look, pull up a picture, a scan of a painting, and then you can click on it, and it'll tell you when it was acquired, what the history is. Well, a vast majority, then at the end there's a summary a vast majority of the art pieces that are in this inventory that they're putting up for people laying claim to are prior to the war. I mean, essentially, they're private collections, you know, and the pieces that were in Hitler's private collection are pre-1940. And, you know, we've gone through that. If you go back and look and do a cross-reference on the records, there's records of him purchasing these items at these art exhibitions from 1937-38 up until 1940. You know, there's at least records of him purchasing over 1,000 items just at the House of German Art exhibitions in Munich, plus receiving at least 200 items on his 50th birthday, and yet they have these items included for people to lay claim to say, well, you know, my great granddaddy may have sold that at a discounted or a coerced price. I mean, this is nonsense. It's definitely nonsense. But again, the German government today in 2012, Deanna, is operating under this coerced artificially written 1943 declaration that voided all sales.
Interesting. Well, you know, at the Birch's Garden, there was a fellow by the name of Colonel Willard White, and he stole Hitler's silverware and some crystal goblets and mailed them home to his home in Austin, Texas. And his wife was Lyndon B. Johnson's sister-in-law. And later, they sold some of these items for something like $25,000 each.
Well, you know, there are sites all over the Internet where they are selling this stuff. And I'll use a couple of examples. There was a someone on the Internet, very prominent, that was selling Hermann Göring's daughter's christening. I think it was her christening gown or a christening goblet. Now, Hermann Göring's daughter is still alive. She was very close to and very fond of her father. I know that she had an interest. I've read several times that she had an interest in getting some of her items back. And the person that was, you know, handling this sale is someone who proclaims to have some sympathies with, you know, this side of, you know, the correct side of history. And I did take, you know, I did write an email suggesting that item be given back to her, and it was never got a response. So I always thought that if there was a situation, there was a little bit of hypocrisy and profit over principle. You know, a lot of these items, some of the heirs, you know, the proper owner's heirs are still alive. And, you know, I really, really think that, you know, people that, you know, really are ethical and moral, they really need to return these items to these people because they were stolen. They were stolen from these people. These people were under the boot of a vicious occupation, the Allied occupation and the Soviet occupation. The women and children, the wives of the National Socialist leaders, were themselves arrested and locked up and subjugated. You know, their art was stolen. And by the way, Hermann Göring's daughter is he was also very much into art. We haven't talked about him. Maybe we can sometime later. But he was very much interested in art and had an eye for art like Hitler. And so did his daughter. But there's a lot of this going on. You go now, they're giving so far, Deanna, as they're digging up the graves of German soldiers and harvesting personal items and medals, and they're selling those on sites such as eBay. And, I mean, that is grotesque. That is absolutely grotesque. And a lot of these nations are not doing what they're supposed to be doing and protecting the graves of soldiers who, you know, died honorably in battle. And something's got to be done about that. But this war booty back, Admiral Dönitz's personal effects were taken as war booty and are on display in some obscure locations. Hermann Göring's baton is on display at one of the Armed Forces Academy. I thought it was the Air Force Academy, but I found out I'm incorrect. It's one of the other academies. One of his uniforms is on display elsewhere. All of these personal effects, all of these items have been taken under the auspices of war booty. But yet the concept of war booty was deemed illegal for German occupation purposes. It seems to be a little odd. And there was widespread theft. Field Marshal Rommel, American soldiers entered his house with his grieving. He had not been dead yet a year when the war ended. And American soldiers went into his house with his grieving widow there and pilfered through his personal effects and stole things from him. From his house, his personal effects, I believe some of them were recovered under orders of, I believe, General Patton, but I could be wrong. It might have been one of the, but I believe when General, and I believe General Patton ordered a guard posted at his front door to prevent further incursions into his wife's privacy. But this,
amazing.
So this is, this happened, you know, and as I said, the good guys don't always win, and the concept of a righteous and moral liberation is a fallacy. And, you know, like I said, the real art theft took place in the post-war years, and a lot of art, like I said, 9,000 pieces of German art, as opposed, it was stolen by the United States alone, as opposed to 567 documented cases of art, war, it was considered war booty by the Germans. You tell me, you know, where the extremes are.
Exactly. Why don't we take a call? Let's take Greg in California. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dean.
Hi. I haven't heard from you for a long time.
Well, you know, I've been at the White House quite a bit lately, you know, hobnobbing. But I wouldn't lie about it. Anyway, Rodney, I got a couple of questions. Is it okay to ask questions about Hitler?
Ask whatever you want. I'll try to give you an answer if I got the information.
I was just wondering, are you familiar with his bloodline?
I'm not familiar with, well, it depends. I mean, go ahead and ask your question. I'm not going to tell you I'm an expert in his genealogy, but I have done some reading and research into some of the fables about him being Jewish and some of those issues.
Well, is that supposedly, to your understanding, he's not any part of Jewish?
He is not Jewish.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I've got a research. Go ahead.
There's an old fable that his grandmother, I believe, or his father's mother or grandmother was a domestic servant in a Jewish household, and that's where all that came about, and that's inaccurate. Germanic people, and of course that would have been in the Austro-Hungarian Empire at that time, right, are notorious record keepers, and you have to register. Those people had to register where they were, and that story falls flat because his family just weren't where they were. It's not accurate.
Yeah, one of my great-grandfathers was the Ministry of Forestry in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, so I've tried to follow a lot of it lately. I wish, Deanna, you would get Hungarian George on again. I know he's hard to get a hold of, but he knows a lot about this. What I was asking, I've got a researcher friend that is just hard-nosed, convinced there's no negotiation, that he is part of the Rothschild family. Number two, that he studied Madame Blavatsky, he was into the occult, he was an avatar. This is slam dunk, this guy says, and I'm caught in the middle between the truth and him because I care about both. And he's just totally the reverse of what most of these shows on Germany are about because of his research. And I'm beside myself because I tend to agree with everything, 1,000% backing Deanna on no matter what she does. And, by the way, I love your bumper music, Deanna. It's just so romantic. I so love it. And, you know how I feel about things, Deanna. But anyway, I just wondered your opinion, whether Hitler was, he was related to Churchill and Stalin. And as we all know, well, I don't know about we all, but all these presidents are related. Do you understand that, Rodney, that all presidents are related by blood?
Well, I think there's quite a few of them that are related. I'm not convinced they all are, but I know many of them are related.
Yeah, this guy says that all are. Plus, he says that they're... Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I know. But getting back to the thing with Hitler, I'm not... I do not believe that there's any truth to him being Rothschild or anything. I mean, that's been going around for a while. And like I say, just a pure... You can do just basic genealogy, the record key, and that falls flat. I think Hitler is what he was. I think he was... Alois Hitler's son. I think he was Clara Hitler's son, and I think he was a remarkable individual, and he was way ahead of his time, and yep. created a worldview, not a political. I think, you know, when people say a political party, a political movement, I think they're dead wrong. He created a worldview that so threatened the establishment, the established political and economic structure, where you would not need these international banking middlemen and such, that it created this marriage of convenience between hyper-capitalism and capitalism and Bolshevism, and they just had to stamp this out. I mean, Churchill himself indicated, and this is something where I think we got a show scheduled later in a month or so about the true origins of World War II. The true origins of World War II had nothing to do with an incursion into Poland to prevent the genocide of ethnic Germans. It had to do with economics.
Right, yep. Well, would you let go? I'm sorry, go ahead, Deanna.
We do have a break. We'll be back in 3 minutes. You're welcome to stay on over the break.
I never thought I would experience what I have by being on the RNA drops. Since I started the drops, I've gotten married, started 3 businesses, and feel limitless. My name is Brandon, and I've always been a skeptic because one of my companies is an investment firm, so we look at the facts. I was presented a bottle of RNA drops without any documentation in 2010 and began taking them due to highly reliable sources and their recommendations, and things quickly progressed. My life seemed brighter, and then one day it happened. I was working in my office on a sunny morning and my spiritual body did a 360-degree backflip and softly landed back in my chair. And that was the day it began. That was my bread of life. To view this patented product, go to freeRNANow.com. That's freeRNANow.com and begin your ascension process. God bless.
Wouldn't you agree? Healthy people are happier and more productive. Obesity is the root cause of many health problems. Do you want to lose weight safely, look sexy and attractive without side effects and no chemicals? Lose weight without the side effects safely with Zeno's Organic Dietary Supplements. Made in the USA, 100% USDA certified organic. Visit www.zenos.com. That's www.zenohs.com. Try our products risk-free for a limited time offer. No purchase necessary. You only pay shipping and handling. Get your old, sexy body back now. Visit Zenos.com. Get your free supplements now. Visit Zenos.com right now. www.zenohs.com. That's www.zenohs.com.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With a Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Rodney Martin, the director of Worldview Foundations. His website is wvfoundations.org. And I think it's important to recognize that the Jews themselves are the people that created the myth that Hitler was a Jew in order to discredit him. Both Veronica Clark and Carolyn Yeager have covered the Hitler myth was a Jew myth extensively on previous programs. And when Germany entered France, the very first properties that they confiscated were owned by the Rothschilds, and Hitler was the one that kicked the bankers out of the country. So I think that that you have to look at where this guy, your friend Greg, is getting his information.
I don't know, Dina. I just don't know. He's just so convinced, and it's absolute, you know, with his family line. He's proven to himself, whatever the wherever he gets it, that they're all related, which I do believe the presidents are. Maybe Rodney doesn't. Number two, he is related to Stalin. That this is all perpetuated from, you know, Babylon, as most of this really does come from, I believe, all the way, and they have not broken their stride in their lies. Just like the 6 million myth I read from a rabbi Anselman said they were perpetuating the same lie in 1920 something of the 6 million.
Sure.
And of course, like another talk show host that's on our network says, from a quote rabbi, I forgot his last name, but he said, some people call it communism, we call it Judaism.
That was Stephen Weiss.
That's right. Yeah, that's
Rabbi Stephen Weiss. Okay, Rodney.
They love the six million number they used in World War One. I mean, they use it because there's some, you know, I know nothing about Judaism, nor do I care, but there's something in their theology that requires some sort of sacrifice of 6 million to go back to the homeland or whatever. So they tried it because they thought they were going to get something sort of concession out of Versailles to get Palestine then. So they were raising that then. I mean, they've been screaming 6 million, 6 million, 6 million. But I mean, even one of their so-called lead scholars who wrote A Big Fallacy, The Destruction of European Jewry, I think the name of the book, couldn't even substantiate 6 million. So I mean, it's just utter nonsense. But you know, I think we started the program off talking about, Deanna, that it has to do not with a big lie, but voluminous lies. And so, you know, we shut down one lie. We proved one lie is false. They come up with another one. And so, you know, the next thing you know, they're going to be saying that Hitler was actually Polish and he invaded Poland to get back some old property. I mean, you never know where they're going to come from. I mean, it's just absolutely, it's all just utter rubbish. You know, the truth is not really hard to get to, really. You just got to sit down and do the work and plug your ears from all the Jew speak and do your own research. But that is the big problem. Is doing research and doing the work is hard, and our society has been conditioned to be lazy and to watch reality TV, and it's just we got a lot of work to do, and you know that's why I'm appreciative that you do what you do and allow me to come up here and rattle on, you know, every once in a while.
Well, I mean, you do the research, and that's what we're interested in. And as I said, the Jews are the ones that created that myth, and it just is not true. All right, we have run out of time. Thank you, Greg, for calling into the program. Thank you, Rodney, for being on the program. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, listeners. Have a wonderful weekend. Bye-bye. Talk to you on Monday.
Next round of the world.